Welcome to Coastal Connection. I'm Brian Russo. Coming up on today's show, we'll revisit some of our favorite stories from the past few months. We'll head to a boxing gym in Salisbury to meet a man who's working hard to keep kids off the street and out of gangs. And we'll visit a therapeutic riding center where horses are used to help children with cerebral palsy, autism, and many other conditions. First, though, we're going to swing by the Nassawango Creek Nature Preserve. It's the largest privately owned natural area in the state of Maryland. It's home to a vast array of native plants and wildlife, and it's often been called one of the most tranquil places here on the shore. The Nassawango Creek flows southward into the Pocomoke River, which of course is a major tributary of the Chesapeake Bay. The Nature Conservancy is one of the world's leading conservation groups, and it takes care of almost 10,000 acres of this majestic bald cypress swamp and upland forest. Back in May, I met up with a group of about 20 ecologists as they were planning to set what's called a prescribed fire to more than 70 acres of the preserve. Deborah Landau is the conservation ecologist for the Maryland DC chapter of the Conservancy. She told me that setting these prescribed fires has very little to do with destruction. She says it's all about renewal.
A lot of these areas are ecologically significant, and we're slowly trying to restore them back to their pre-settlement, pre-European settlement conditions. We can do a lot of work with hydrology, with plant species, but what we really need to do to fully restore the area is to bring back a lot of the ecological processes that have been missing. And one of those is fire. Historically, wildfires used to sweep through this area periodically. And what's happened now is folks have moved in, we've created roads, subdivisions, Walmarts, and so when a wildfire starts, it stops, it hits a road or some sort of lower block, or the fire station comes in and puts it out, which is a wonderful thing to do because personal safety is primary. But in this case, in order to bring back these natural communities, we're bringing back fire. And what we're finding is a combination of the fuel reduction, the heat pulse that comes through the ground that germinates, it stimulates a lot of the native plants to germinate. All these different factors combined have really speeded up the ecological restoration of these natural areas.
It's interesting. I always equate fire with destruction or the end of something, and it sounds like it's part of the natural progression of creation of something or growth.
Absolutely. Fire is a natural phenomenon. It's a natural process. And often what we see is the result of too much fuel building up in an area. Prescribed fires prevent wildfires. Mm-hmm. In the fires, these mega fires that we're seeing out west are not a natural system. What's happening there is after 70 years of fire suppression, so many fuels have built up that when you do have that trigger, and the trigger will happen inevitably, then you get these mega fires that are so hot, they burn everything up. They crown, which means they reach to the top of the trees, which is not the way a natural fire should happen. So what we're doing here is called prescribed fire. We very carefully go in, decide the areas we want to burn, what our focus is, what our restoration goals are. We plan around units. We look at what weather conditions we need to have just the right kind of fire, a slow backing fire, a hot stand replacement fire. And when we can get all of these things together, the right fuels, the right weather, the right crews, then we can really tailor those fires to meet our ecological restoration goals.
After a quick briefing, we were issued our yellow firefighting jumpsuits, and we took off down a long dirt road called Bear Swamp. Zipping by us were all-terrain vehicles that looked kind of like golf carts on steroids. We then hung a left onto yet another dirt road, which slalomed into a narrow pathway through thickets of greenbrier and loblolly pines. Digging his hands through a brush pile was Chris Robinson of the Maryland Forest Service. He was the burn boss for the day's prescribed fire.
I just try to get, just kind of feel for the litter on the ground to see how dry it is. Mostly hardwood leaves here, but if it was pine needles, you can almost take the pine needles, and when you try to bend them, if they break or if they just bend all the way over, they're still pretty damp. But if they break, and it, you're pretty dry. And we try to look and see what the actual soil conditions are underneath. This is still pretty damp, so we shouldn't have any problems with the fire burning into the ground, which is causes major control problems. So once this fire burns off the surface litter, it should be pretty much done. It'll get down to that moist ground, and it'll pretty much be out.
So essentially what you're saying is, based on what we're doing today, the winds are right, and basically the conditions are proper for the fire to essentially put itself out.
Yes. Yep. Once we're done, within a couple hours, there'll be maybe just some residual smoke in a couple places, but it'll pretty much be out. If we were to wait later in the summer, once the tree starts sucking up all the moisture out of the ground, then you have the potential for the fire to burn into the ground and get into the root systems, and then it creates a lot of smoke issues and control problems and could burn for long periods of time.
As the burn boss, what are you thinking, you know, from the moment that it's set to the moment it essentially, if all goes well, goes out? What are all the things, all the moving parts that you're dealing with?
You're looking to make sure that everybody's safe, you know, number one. And number two, you got to look at, are you meeting the objectives that you set out to accomplish? You're more or less a coordinator. I mean, as a burn boss, I'm not going to be actively involved in the actual burning of the unit. I'm more or less supervising the entire project, which sometimes it's a little bit harder not doing anything than it is actually in there, you know, actually right. working and doing stuff. So.
Robertson gives the signal for three men holding drip torches to start setting fire to the perimeter of the unit. Basically, the plan is to start from the bottom of the unit and burn each side like this. And every few minutes, one of the firemen runs into the thicket and sets fire to a large chunk of brush and then tries to run out on the other side. But as Richard West will tell you, there's not much running involved when there's this much greenbrier. Richard is one of the men manning the drip torches.
It's pretty thick in there, trying to find some deer tracks.
Steve, yep.
Get in there, but
go for Eric.
You also want to be able to get out.
Yeah.
Usually the fire burns across the way you went in, so you got to find another path out.
Right. And, you know, that's got to be a bit precarious. You go in, and it seems like you're getting in pretty easy, but on your way out, I'm watching you get tangled time and time again.
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to pick my escape route as I go in, but it doesn't always work out.
Right. And, you know, what are the tripping points that you worry about when setting these things? Just, you know, it seems like everything's so controlled, everybody's so calm. Can it go awry very quickly?
I think the wind is the big question mark.
Yeah.
You can see the fire's kind of creating its own wind. A lot of it's trying to get a good heat buildup so the wind will suck in to the center. Fire all pulls together, but if you get a wind shift coming back across the line, that's when it gets dangerous. And when that happens, a lot of times the black that just burned is your best safety zone.
Right. So if you ever get into a precarious position where you feel like there's no way out, you just go back out through what's burned.
Yeah, a lot of times that's the plan.
Right. Some gust up to 3.
Weather reports are a constant throughout the day, as is this sound.
Fire in a hole on East Lawn.
Which is literally a flare gun being shot into the middle of the unit to light what the perimeter fires haven't quite gotten to yet. After a few minutes, the fire picks up speed. The smoke rises high into the air, and the heat just continues to intensify to a temperature that feels like the skin could melt right off your face. Usually when 70 acres of anything is on fire, people are freaking out. But everyone here was not just calm, seemed quite pleased. Here's Deborah Landau again.
It's going perfectly. So what we're seeing here is a nice column of smoke going straight up. And as it reaches a certain altitude, it's shifting south. So it's exactly what we'd prescribed, and it's going just as planned. So it's going, getting up out of the way, out of our way, out of the town's way, and then moving south, away from the road, away from the airport. So, picture perfect.
But a few minutes later, things changed a bit.
So now we're seeing, as the fire progresses, we're seeing a difference in the smoke behavior. Whereas before the smoke was going south because of this northerly wind, now as the fire is flanked on both sides with lots of black, the fire is pulling in to the middle of the unit. So the smoke is all going in. We're no longer standing in smoke. And the fire has essentially created its own weather. It's pulling all the fire in, all the heat in, and we've got a perfect smoke column up top. So this is exactly what we want to see. No smoke down below. No smoke will be in the roads, and it's all drawing itself in. So it's safer, and it's creating the ecological effects that we were looking for.
Of course, not everyone is a fan of these prescribed burns. There are groups throughout the country that believe that the smoke emitted from these prescribed burns in managed wildfires is unfiltered wood smoke that is extremely dangerous and up to 12 times as harmful to the lungs as cigarette smoke. But with all that said, there were a few interesting things happening in the forest that I didn't expect. For instance, just a few steps away from the perimeter of the fire, I heard more and more birds. It was almost as if they came to see what was going on.
So the birds know, they're attracted to the fire. They know, the small birds know that there's insects flying out. The large birds, the raptors, know that there's voles and shrews running out. And so they all come in, and after the fire's out, actually, we get this amazing preponderance of woodpeckers that come in. There are insects that are attracted to fires that will come in that look for recently burned trees. And there's a whole suite of organisms that require fire that come in and thrive from these fires. So what we're hoping to do after this initial burn, which is always the most challenging, come back in 2 or 3 years, burn again, and then do it a third time, and that's when I think we'll really start to see the native grasses coming back, the native herbaceous vegetation coming back, and get more of that sandy, open, xeric dune character that we're looking for.
So essentially this burn today is the first in a long-term strategy to create not only, you know, vegetation and plant life, but also create a better habitat.
Exactly. For this particular unit, it's the first one. We've got a series of units that we burn at different levels, at different stages. So it's a nice staggering, so that depending on the weather and the crew we have for that particular day, we can show up to the unit that's prepped and ready to go.
How many burns like this do you plan in a season, or perhaps annually?
Ideally, we'd love to do from 3 to 350 acres a year.
So based on the weather that we've been having this year and the drought that is being projected, do you believe that you'll hit that goal?
No, we probably won't.
But regardless of the prescribed fires the ecologists at the Nature Conservancy may or may not be able to set this season, today's burn was a smashing success. And maybe, in a few years' time, this scorched patch of land will be a vibrant ecosystem, a bustling habitat for wildlife, or maybe the home of a rare orchid that hasn't been seen here at the Nassawango Creek Nature Preserve in years. So the next time you see smoke from a fire, it may not just mark the end of something. It could be just the beginning of something else entirely. I'm Brian Russo, and you're listening to Coastal Connection.